This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Happy Friday. Welcome into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson, hanging out with you from rotowire.com for the next hour here on VSiN. Jeff, a ton to get to. A colossal show coming your way over the next 60 minutes. We got a great guest, Adam Zdrowicz, joining us at 1:30 Eastern to break down what we saw in the Sweet 16 last night, some plays for the four games coming our way tonight, as well as an early look at the two Elite Eight matchups that are already set. Talk some NBA. We got 10 games on the slate tonight. I'll give you all my favorite props, a side that I like in the association. And Jeff, it is Dinger Friday. So we'll have home run props from you. We'll have a full look at the Friday Major League Baseball slate to round things out. Look, as always, if you don't catch us live, if you just want to rewatch the show, re-listen, go check out Prop Points in podcast form. You can find our show. You can find every VSiN show as a podcast, wherever you get your pods, on Apple, on Spotify. Just search Prop Points, search VSiN, and you will find it there. Jeff, we got to start in the college hoops world. Four games in the Sweet 16 last night. The first two, all-timers, right? Two games that were both tied late. They're happening simultaneously. Purdue ends up hanging on to beat Texas. Trey Kaufman-Wren tips in a rebound with under a second left to give Purdue a 79-77 win. Iowa-Nebraska came down to the wire as well. A game that Nebraska led throughout. Iowa didn't take the lead until about 2 minutes left, but a big run at the end of the game pushes the Hawkeyes into the Elite Eight. Where do you want to start here on a huge slate to digest?
Well, let's just go in order. Texas and Purdue first. We'll just go that way. Just go in order of those games. First of all, great back and forth game. Texas, what a run. I got to say, they more than earned their spot in the tournament there. They had Purdue on the ropes at one point in time. Purdue took advantage of a couple of friendly whistles and, you know, got Texas in foul trouble. And I think that was huge down the stretch. Even the game-winning tip-in. That was one arguably where Trey Kaufman-Wren might have been over the back a little bit there. They got the advantage of a couple of whistles. There's a lot of stoppages in this game. There's, you know, hook and hold reviews left and right. It was a very physical game. And I think that befitted Purdue. I think that that's the type of style that they want to be able to play. And it worked out pretty well in their favor there. No shame for Texas here. They played hard. They hit some, you know, they were playing hurt. And yet Purdue came through at the end. This was obviously Purdue's toughest test so far in the tournament. They've been on a roll ever since the Big Ten tournament started. Remember, they limped into the Big Ten tournament. They were the 7 seed in the Big Ten tournament, yet we're a 2 in the NCAA tournament. That's a pretty neat trick to pull off.
Incredibly evenly played game. Neither team led by more than 7 at any point throughout the 40 minutes. You got to tip your cap to Tremont Mark for Texas. 29 points on 11 of 15, 5 threes, no turnovers. You know, hit so many big shots to stem runs for Purdue last night. I do think in some ways, Jeff, Purdue lucky to escape, going 4 of 20 from three as a team, with all 4 of those makes belonging to Fletcher Lawyer. Everyone else was 0 of 12 from beyond the arc, and Purdue still able to escape. So they set up a matchup now in the Elite Eight against Arizona. Arizona currently a 6.5-point favorite in that one. We'll talk more about that game with Adam Zdrowicz later in the show. Let's talk a little bit about Iowa-Nebraska. Jeff, this is one Iowa won 77-71. My big takeaway watching this last night, it felt to me like Nebraska was up more the entire game. This was a very Nebraska partial crowd in Oklahoma City. I mean, this felt like a Nebraska home game. If you were just listening to the game, you know, you would think Nebraska is up 15 at the half. And I thought it was so important for Iowa over and over to, you know, hit a shot to cut the lead back to 8, and then it's back to 6, and then all of a sudden it's back to 5. Like, it just felt to me like Nebraska should have been running away with it. And then, of course, when the Huskers finally go cold, Iowa puts together a 15-6 run late in the game, didn't take the lead until around the 2-minute mark. And then, of course, you know, the play that everybody's talking about, Jeff, Nebraska down 3 with about 58 seconds on the clock. Iowa inbounds the ball all the way down the court to a wide open man for a layup and 1. Why was he so open, Jeff? Because Nebraska had 4 players on the court.
Right. Hoiberg afterwards took the blame for that one there. Just a horrific gaffe. As well as they played in the end game against Vanderbilt, they fell apart against Iowa in the end game in this particular game. The shot selection at the very end of the game was pretty tough. They had some really bad offensive possessions. At like the 5-minute mark, they had like a 3-point lead and the ball. And they just kind of, I think they had a shot clock violation, a forced 3, which was an air ball. There's a couple really bad possessions in a row. They had a chance to stretch out a lead. I think they were even up five at one point late, and then just couldn't get the job done. The offense, which was so good down the stretch against Vanderbilt, was really bad in the stretch against Iowa in this game here. And then, of course, there's that defensive possession. Iowa just took care of business down the stretch, much like they did against Florida. Really impressive run by them. Final eight for them since, I think, 1987. You know, Roy Marble's really happy about this one here. AC Earl, these are guys I saw in college a little bit there. This is a fun stretch for Ben McCollum in the crowd there. Just after so many other tournament crashouts for Iowa, this is fun to see what they are doing right now.
So I remember Roy Devin Marble, Jeff, Roy Marble's son, who played like a decade ago at Iowa. So that gives you a little bit of context. So
shows my age
for Iowa.
Here.
The problem is now they got to play Illinois, which is coming off of a win over Houston last night. We had easily the lowest scoring first half of any tournament game. It was 24-22 Illinois at the break. And all of a sudden the Illini go on a 20-2 run early in the second half to blow this game open. And you just felt watching it in real time, Jeff, like Houston is just not built to come back from a double-digit deficit. It's a painful offensive possessions, especially in the first half for Houston. You got Sanak, you know, taking 14-foot catch and shoot jumpers on the baseline. You're like, could you just stretch that out? At least make it a three if you're going to clank those. Houston shot just 9 of 32 from beyond the arc. And honestly, that number was worse before they hit a couple late in the game in desperation mode. And look, I think this game was played in the mud. It was kind of played at the pace that Houston wanted, a sub-60 pace. But Houston puts up a 94 offensive rating. We had two total fast break points in the entire game. I think Houston, this played out the way the Cougars wanted, but it was the worst possible time to have their second worst offensive game of the season.
Absolutely. We talked about this, though, going into the game, that they go through these stretches offensively where they just can't buy a bucket there, and they did it at the wrong time. Illinois' length is so impressive. Really, and they get so many good minutes out of freshmen, too. This might be Underwood's best coaching job. He's a fantastic coach. He gets a lot of good imports from overseas. I just like the way this Illini team plays, too. My toughest decision in brackets, and I chose poorly, was Florida or Illinois making it to the Final Four. I didn't have Houston going through. I chose poorly, though, because, of course, Iowa knocked off Florida, and I had Florida in the title game. So my brackets are trash, but the Illini, they look really good right now.
Quickly, Arizona, of course, just crushes Arkansas last night, 109-88. You kind of knew like 5 minutes in, Jeff, the way that this game was going to go. Just an overwhelming performance by Arizona. And, you know, I thought Arkansas did well to prevent this from truly getting out of hand. You know, there were a few runs where it's like, all right, leads up to 20. And it felt like it was going to turn into a true blowout. And Arkansas, you know, was able to keep fighting toward the end. Darius Acuff, 28 points. But it was a quiet 28 as far as that goes from a freshman in that spot. Arizona just on cruise control against an Arkansas team that had looked so good through the first two rounds. Arizona, again, a 6.5-point favorite against Purdue on Saturday. We're going to talk some opening day takeaways in just a moment. But, folks, it may be the offseason on DraftKings. Football never sleeps. Early bird best ball is back. You can get in now to compete for a share of $1 million in total prizes before the season kicks off. Best ball is simple. You draft your team once, and that's it. Every week, your highest scores automatically count. No waivers, no trades, no setting lineups. Just build your squad, let it ride all season long. If you love drafting, this is your edge to get started early. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app, draft your early bird best ball lineup for a shot at a share of $1 million in prizes, and drafts stay open until the season kicks off. So now's the time to jump in. You draft it, we crown it. Sign up now to take your shot at a share of $1 million in prizes on DraftKings Early Bird Best Ball Contest. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in New York. Call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in Connecticut. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Must be 18 plus in most states. Restrictions apply. See terms at DraftKings.com. Sponsored by DraftKings. A little bit of baseball talk, Jeff. Big opening day for rookie hitters. That was my primary takeaway. Look, we could talk about Paul Skenes getting chased in the first inning. We could talk about his 67.5 ERA right now on the season. But, man, Chase DeLauter, Carson Bench, J.J. Weatherholt, Kevin McGonigal, all coming through yesterday.
Absolutely. McGonigal comes up first time, first at bat with the bases loaded and hits the first pitch for a double there, knocks in two, four hits on the day. Nick, you know how I've been singing the praises of McGonigal all, draft season long, backing it with my teams. Man, that was just So nice to see there. One of the disaster starts in the opposite side of that game, Nick Pivetta, really tough start for him, got knocked around by Detroit early in that one there. J.J. Weatherholt, homers in his debut for the Cardinals. Chase DeLauder, two home runs. You know, I love seeing that with Chase DeLauder. He's dealt with so many different injuries in the minor leagues. He's been on our prospect radar for like 3-4 years, drawing a lot of comparisons to former Cleveland strong player Grady Sizemore. Fell short of great because Sizemore also was hurt a ton, but they have a very similar skill set. DeLauder, actually, we saw him in the playoffs last year, but this was his first regular season game. So it's still his debut. That's the thing that's pretty amazing. Two homers in that one for the Guardians. They get the win. The only negative on that one there for the Guardians is they lost Tanner Bibee to a shoulder issue after 5 innings. Today, the news was a little bit better on Bibee, so we'll see about that. But that was impressive. And then Bench. You mentioned Carson Bench also homering. Struck out the first two times. Looked a little out of his depth. Then he homered the next time up there. Pretty impressive there. You know, the funny thing about Bench is in spring training, he wasn't doing too much pulled fly balls. And that's something that's a good indicator for home run potential there. Pulled this one for the home run against the Pirates in that game there. All around good day for the Mets. All around tough day for Paul Skeens, as you alluded to, too. Horrible defense from O'Neill Cruz in center field in that first inning.
That was tough to watch. That was very, very tough to watch. Ended up being a blowout for the New York Mets. Of course, I got to give a shout out to Jacob Mizrowski as well, Jeff. Yes. Gave up a home run to the first batter of the season. Bounced back 11 Ks for Mizrowski, the most ever in an opening day game, for a Milwaukee Brewers pitcher. We're going to talk some NBA when we come back. Some tanking reform proposals from the league earlier today. I'll give my take on those. We'll give you all your best bets for a 10-game NBA slate when we come back. You watch your prop points. Let me get your attention real quick, podcast listeners. It's March, which means the madness is officially upon us, and the folks at VSiN have really gone crazy with this one. I'm being told that for just $29.99, you could get unlimited access to VSiN Pro through May 1st. I'm talking picks throughout the tournament, public betting data for every single game, plus sharp tools, projections, articles, and more. Just click the link in the description to get started. It's March, baby. All right, now back to the show.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. We are with rotowire.com. The NBA presented to its board of governors three anti-tanking proposals, Nick. Been a lot. That's been a part of the NBA dialogue for a while now. Your reaction to those three proposals, please.
Yeah, this is clearly at the front of mind for Adam Silver, who is usually pretty measured. He usually, you know, takes a long time to make decisions. And you know, if you've been following this, like this is something the NBA and Adam Silver are just ready to institute right away. You know, they want anti-tanking reform for as soon as next season. And look, I don't want to come down too hard on these three ideas. I'll say right away, I don't really like any of them, but I also do not have the perfect solution. You know, I at this point, you know, maybe we just try not even having a lottery, like all 30 teams, regardless of what happens in the postseason, regardless of who wins the finals, every single team has the same lottery odds. If we want to go down that path, because to me, that might be one of the only ways where you really accomplish not incentivizing teams to lose. I think everything that was proposed earlier this morning by the league, there's still a workaround. There's still a way it could be exploited by teams that realize that they have no chance to win the NBA finals. And smartly, in a lot of ways, say, okay, if we can't win the finals, what are we doing? Why do we want the 7th seed in the Eastern Conference? Where does that ultimately get us? So let's take a look at the three proposals here. The first one, an 18-team lottery, which would mean all the non-playoff teams plus all the play-in teams enter the lottery. The bottom 10 teams in this scenario would all have the same odds. That I'm not totally opposed to, because I think it's one thing to be in the lottery. It's another thing when you have a dramatically better chance at the number one pick. If you have a bottom three, a bottom four, a bottom five record, I think that's why we're seeing this true race to the bottom between teams like Washington and Brooklyn and Indiana and Sacramento. So I think that would be a step in the right direction. at the same time, you know, I still think there's always going to be a line where it's like, okay, would I rather be the 8 seed, or would I rather just try to drop out of the play-in or make sure that I'm in the play-in as opposed to being the 6 seed, so then I have a better chance of jumping up in the lottery? Like, there will be ways that teams try to exploit this. The second model is a 22-team lottery. So that would mean all the non-playoff teams, all the play-in teams, and then all the teams that lose in the first round would be included in the lottery. And the wrinkle here is that it would be a two-season accumulation of record, or basically your average number of wins over a two-season span. They've also talked about instituting a minimum wins floor. So let's say that would be 25 wins. That means that if a team would win 16 games, you would automatically get your wins counted for the season bumped up to 25. So again, on paper, that disincentivizes you from being truly, truly horrible. You know, this race for being into the bottom three, which I'm on board with. I don't like the two-season model, though, Jeff, because to me, right now, maybe a bigger issue than just tanking itself for the NBA is these teams that are tanking for multiple years. You know, I think most fan bases over a 10 or 15 year span, you could sign up for one tank. You know, you understand it. NBA fans are smart. They know why their teams are doing this. The bigger problem to me is when you have the Utah Jazz and the Washington Wizards doing this for 2-3 years in a row. It's like sometimes it can feel like the entire prime of a player, like Lauri Markkanen, is just spent playing 45 games a year, faking injuries for the Utah Jazz. So the two-season model, I understand it. It seems aimed at teams like the Pacers, who were good last year and now are bad this year. I don't think that really solves the bigger issue here, though, which is, you know, teams tanking for multiple seasons. I think that's a big black mark on the NBA right now.
100% agree, and I'm glad you said that, because I didn't want to make it all about me, because I tend to do that sort of thing there, but it strikes me as a solution in search of a problem. This is a unique storm of a perfect storm of a season. We have this awesome draft class coming into the NBA. If we had this last year's draft class or the year before's draft class, would we have 9-10 teams going tanking like they are? Probably not. It's also so many teams have significant injuries. The Pacers, they would not be in this position if they didn't lose Ty Halliburton in the NBA finals last year. They'd be going all in again. They, you know, and I hate to bring it just about the Pacers, but, you know, they've never tried to tank like this. This is a team that soldiered on, had all these 40-win seasons year after year after year. They can't get the upper-class NBA free agent either. You try to build around that. You try to go, you know, really try and go spend. You can't do that because they don't come there. So it's really strikes me as patently unfair to be putting in these sort of measures here.
Yeah. I think you're right. It is an overreaction to this specific season. And yes, tanking is worse now than it's ever been. It's always been a part of the league. You know, why do we not get on the Colorado Rockies and the Chicago White Sox? We make fun of them, but it doesn't result in, like, we need league-wide reform to eliminate this. We need every team to be pushing to win 80 games. Like, no, we just accept that some teams are bad in Major League Baseball. And I'm totally fine doing that in the NBA. The last thing I'll say on this, Jeff, is it's all just too complicated. The NBA is becoming too complicated for the average fan, where you have to like go out of your way to find out, like, okay, so how is my pick affected? How is my team? Like, where are they picking this year? When does this all start? Like, the play-in tournament is confusing for people. The in-season tournament is confusing. All-Star weekend, who knows what that looks like any given year. The NBA is just jumping through extreme hoops, I think, to fix a short-term problem that, to me, it's just part of the league. Somebody has to be bad. There's no magical world in which every single team is in playoff contention the final week of the season.
100% agree. 100% agree. We're going to take a look at tonight's slate here in the NBA. But first, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as a betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire gives you the real tools the pros use. Rankings, projections, breaking updates, and data that never sleeps. Our world-renowned tools that help you win your league. All sorts of good stuff there. Whether you're setting your fantasy lineups, making picks, or placing bets, RotoWire's award-winning insights give you a real edge. Get started today at rotowire.com. Use promo code VSIN for 15% off any RotoWire product. Check out our new Smart Money tool. We debuted that as well. You can use promo code VSIN for 15% off that as well. Nick, let's talk about tonight's NBA slate. Fun set of games. Hawks-Celtics is one I'm really looking forward to, except no Jaylen Brown for tonight's game.
Yeah, well, I'll stop ranting about tanking here. We'll go rapid fire, try to get you as many NBA plays as we can. So Hawks-Celtics is still an interesting spot for me. I'm glad that we have the news now ahead of time that Jaylen Brown won't play. There was some speculation there, but Celtics are still 4.5-point favorites. They will have Derek White. They will have Nemias Keita, who were both questionable earlier. I think this is still a Celtics spot for me, Jeff. I know it could be a letdown after beating OKC earlier this week. But you do have to question the resume a little bit for the Atlanta Hawks. They're coming off an overtime win over Detroit on Wednesday. A good win, but no Cade Cunningham. You look at the teams that they beat during this run, it's almost entirely bad teams. Memphis, Golden State, Dallas, Orlando, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Dallas, Philly, Milwaukee, Portland, Washington, Brooklyn. There's a couple decent teams mixed in there, but when they've run into teams like Houston, Miami, Charlotte, Minnesota, they've gotten crushed in all those games. And look, again, you could understand this being a letdown spot for Boston. Jason Tatum's still working his way back. No Jaylen Brown. That should make things easier on Atlanta. But I think this is still a Boston spot for me. This will be the best defense that they've run into essentially in upwards of a month.
Indeed. Miami, big win over Cleveland earlier this week. Their reward, another game at Cleveland. Rare back-to-back games against the same team in the same place. We saw that. I remember OKC and Denver had that last year at 1.2. What do you like in this game?
Yeah, we're actually seeing a ton of that in the NBA this season. I think that's been one way that they're trying to cut down on travel miles for teams. You get these kind of back-to-back games twice in two nights or twice in three nights. So Heat ran away with a win on Wednesday. They jumped out to a huge lead. They blew that lead and then reopened it to win in blowout fashion. This is one where I'm staying away from the side. It does look like Jared Allen is going to be back. I think that's huge offensively for Cleveland. They had really struggled not having Allen out there as far as the Harden-Allen pick and roll. Just weren't really able to get that going with Evan Mobley. So with Jared Allen, assuming he's out there, I do like James Harden over 8.5 assists. You can find that at plus money at DraftKings. And then you have to look at Tyler Hero over 4.5 rebounds tonight, minus 111 at BetMGM. Only had 2 rebounds against the Cavs on Wednesday. That doesn't look good. But prior to that, Jeff went over this number in 7 straight.
All right. Rockets coming off of a weird overtime loss where they scored 13 straight points and then gave up 15 straight points to the Timberwolves. They get the Grizzlies tonight. A little step down in competition, at least.
A big step down in competition. They are on the road. They're 13.5 point favorites. I would love to say I could just fully trust the Rockets to win this game handily, but that has not been the case. They are out of the circle of trust. I think this is a prop spot for me, though. And, you know, the Rockets facing a bad team and still being liable to not blow them out, I think that does help us a little bit when you're looking at props. We've had some success just targeting the points for Kevin Durant. I don't mind looking at the over 25.5 tonight, but I think this is a Shangoon spot. Over 20.5 points for him, minus 108 at FanDuel. You know, we need him to probably get to 28, 29 minutes at minimum. This Grizzlies team is terrible defensively. They play really fast. They give up a ton of second chance points. They give up a ton of points in the paint. On paper, this should be a huge spot for Shangoon, who already has 2 big games against Memphis this season.
All right. I got about a minute left. Bulls at Thunder. What do you like in this one?
Yeah, interesting game here. The Bulls should have most of their guys tonight. You know, there's a ton of players on the injury report, but the bulk of those guys are either probable or questionable. We have OKC coming in, at least as of now, fully healthy. This is an overspot for me, Jeff, at 239.5. The Bulls just gave up 157 points earlier this week to the Philadelphia 76ers. They put up over 130 themselves in that game. OKC, yeah, they're coming off of that loss to Boston. I think this is a get some frustrations out type of spot against a really bad defense. Tough spot for the Bulls to hang around as 19.5 point dogs, but I think OKC kind of takes the training wheels off after playing Boston on Wednesday.
All right, very good. Adam Zadroik is going to come down, join us on the Progressive Guest Line, talk about tonight's Sweet 16 games. This is Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson here with you. Got 4 more games coming our way tonight in the Sweet 16. Those are St. John's Duke, Alabama, Michigan, Michigan State, UConn, and then Tennessee, Iowa State in the late window. Thrilled to bring back on our good friend, our college hoops expert at rotowire.com, Adam Zadroik. You can find him on Twitter at rotozadroik. You can, of course, find all of his work for us at rotowire.com. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Adam, looking forward to getting all of your thoughts, all of your plays for tonight's games. But first, a little reaction to what we saw last night, specifically in Illinois-Houston. How surprised were you to see Illinois pull away and kind of feel like they put that game away midway through the second half?
I actually wasn't too surprised. Obviously, the way that they won it, the way that they put together, what, a 17-0 run. But I think all week I was, and even in my brackets, I thought Illinois was the better team than Houston. Everyone, the analysis from everyone was just like, well, Houston's at home, so I'm going to pick them to win this game, pick them to cover. But I just think if you look at the teams, I know Illinois played really good defense, better than they had most of the season. But this just wasn't the same Houston team as prior seasons. And I took Illinois money line. I took them on the spread. I took them a lot of ways. I had that was my most successful game last night, along with Arizona. I thought that was going to be a blowout as well. I won't talk about the other ones, though.
Fair enough. St. John's Duke is tonight. A lot of early love for St. John's. I think even like in ESPN tournament brackets, they were picked ahead of time at a 20% rate over Duke. What do you like in this game? What do you think is the outcome of this one here?
I think, you know, the main talking point, Caleb Foster, we still, it looks like a game time call. He's been saying for a week that, you know, the possibility is there, but I think either way, I'm going to be on the under on this one, under 140.5. And I think that as we look at St. John's, they go into so many droughts. We look at some of those UConn games, especially that second one where they couldn't score. But the big one, it's kind of gone under the radar, I guess. And Ngangba, you know, their big man, their center, I think is, you know, the fulcrum of their defense. And I think there's going to be so many times St. John's try and get into an offense. If they're not shooting well from outside, how are they going to score? I know Ngangba is just back from his injury, 13 minutes last game, but he's had almost a full week to practice and rest up. So I think if we can get at least, you know, 15, 20 minutes out of Ngangba, that's just going to help Duke so much more. It helped them in the second half against TCU. And that's just going to lead to struggles. I don't want to touch the spread because I do think there might be a problem here in terms of the St. John's press and on the Duke guards. I think that Duke may not be, they'll be ready for it, but without Caleb Foster, it may be a little difficult. So I'm going to stay away from the spread. I do think Duke's going to win, but I do like the under 140.5 a little more.
I'm with you on that. I'm playing the under in the VSiN March betting challenge, Adam, which is probably really bad news for you because I was on the under in Iowa, Nebraska last night. And about 3 minutes into the game, it was very clear which way that was heading. Let's talk about Alabama, Michigan. Now, you are a Michigan State guy. We'll get to your thoughts on the Spartans in a moment. But I know you have to set your biases aside. You have to be a real analyst here. And you're looking at Michigan to cover the 8.5. You know, tell us why you like the Wolverines and give us the latest update on Aiden Holloway as well.
I think this is the perfect matchup for Michigan. That's kind of why I have them in advancing and in a lot of my brackets, just because they had so many good matchups in their way to the Elite Eight, to the Final Four. And I'm surprised this number hasn't gone up. I actually saw some, there's still some 8.5s out here. It's maybe 9.5 at a lot of places now. I think it's just going to be a double-digit win here. After that Arizona game last night, I think it's just going to be pretty similar. Alabama plays a little quicker. Similarly, they aren't a good defensive rebounding team. They aren't a great defensive rebounding team. They don't play great defense. We saw Arizona's offense just carve up the Arkansas defense last night. And I don't know what's going to change here from Alabama. They're going to play with speed, and I think that actually plays into Michigan's hands a little bit because I think Michigan's going to be more efficient scoring. And if people come into the game, be like, well, Alabama can stay competitive if they hit their threes. I mean, if you have to say that a team has to make 20 threes to stay competitive, I don't want to take that team. But in terms of Holloway, he did get some, he's just not going to be with the team. That was the latest report just right before I got on here. So there was some questions about, you know, the court ruling and everything, but he's not with the team. So no Aiden Holloway, which obviously doesn't help Alabama's case here.
How much do you dig into like how conferences are doing in the tournament there when you're kind of evaluating these matchups? The SEC has run into some tough results here when they've stepped up in class against the Big 12 and the Big 10. Does that rate into your analysis at all?
I think maybe, you know, inherently when you look at the numbers, it should. When you just look at non-conference, the SEC didn't have a non-conference before we got to conference play. Then we got to conference play. These teams started beating up on each other. Florida had a lot of success. They beat up on most of the SEC, and we see how that turned out for them. But I think it's kind of built in with what these teams look like. The top teams, Arkansas, Alabama, where's the defense? We'll see about Tennessee and Iowa State. I think that it's just – it's not the best season for the SEC. Like you said, the results are kind of panning out that when you look at early in the season, when they struggled in a lot of non-conference matchups, it's kind of playing out in March Madness as well.
Talking with Adam Zdroic, college hoops expert for us at rotowire.com, stopping by via the Progressive guest line. Adam, we mentioned you are a Michigan State guy. Best of luck to you and the Spartans tonight. They tip off at 9:45 p.m. Eastern in the late window against UConn. How are you playing this one?
Yeah, notice I'm not wearing green today. So, you know, all business for me. This is a business meeting.
Impartial.
Business game. I've been back and forth in this game all week in terms of how to read it. From what I saw, Michigan State actually opened -1.5. Now it's gone towards UConn, which I think is probably the correct move here. I think UConn has more depth. I think that when they're playing at their peak, when they're playing as well as they can, UConn's peak at offense is a little higher. Their upside's a little higher offensively. Obviously, both good defensive teams. I mean, I'm the under 134.5. I think there's going to be, similar to St. John's in that first game in D.C., that both these offenses are going to have stretches of where can you score? Can you score points? There's going to be 4-minute stretches, maybe longer, of, okay, what's going on in this game? You know, as you said, I kind of thought that was going to happen with Iowa and Nebraska last night. I just don't think that it's going to be the same situation where these teams are just knocking down threes like they haven't all season. So under 134.5, I am siding Michigan State, though. I think when you look at it from the outside, probably like UConn's team a little more in terms of what I was talking about. But I like Jeremy Fears more. I like him as the best guard in this game. And I like Kohler and Cooper down low just a tad bit more than Terrace Reed. So I'm going to be on Michigan State. I will say that, but I'd rather take, if you want my non-biased pick, it is under 134.5.
All right. What about Tennessee, Iowa State? Joshua Jefferson, obviously one of the big storylines here. They had a breathtaking run in the second half against Kentucky without him. I just love the way this Iowa State defense plays. I think they swarm. I was talking with a friend of mine. He says it looks like they have 6 defenders out there all the time.
Yeah, that was like peak Houston when they always looked like they had 6 defenders. It didn't look like it last night, but prior seasons for Houston. Yeah, we'll see. We still don't know with Joshua Jefferson, which usually isn't a good sign. We'll probably have to go into this before you make any bets, at least not including the over-under. You probably want to wait to see what his status is. It looks like it's moved up a little bit, 4.5. Saw 3.5 in some places still. I'm still on Iowa State, though. You know, as you said, like their defense a lot. Tennessee, obviously a defensive team, but we just saw at the end of the Tennessee-Virginia game, just Jacoby Gillespie and their guards, Bishop Boswell, just kind of struggle to, you know, hold on to the ball. And they're up the majority of that game, up double digits at times. And they got some pressure and they couldn't deal with it. And now you're playing Iowa State. How are you going to deal with that for an entire game? So I just can't trust Tennessee, no matter Joshua Jefferson's there or not. So I'm going to be on Iowa State, and I'd probably lean slightly a little on the under here. I think that's around 140-ish as well.
Adam, about a minute left. Want to get your quick thoughts on the two Elite Eight matchups we have set for Saturday. Iowa, Illinois. I think if you're the Illini, you recognize how dangerous this Iowa team could be. You're also pretty happy, I think, to see them as your Elite Eight opponent. So anything for you in that game or in Purdue, Arizona?
I mean, I've been against Iowa. I was against them in the Florida game. I was against them in last night's game as well. their offense is just playing ridiculous right now, which, you know, their 3 games in the tournament just doesn't add up to how they looked over the regular season. They didn't really have an elite win over the regular season. Now their offense is just carving up. What can Illinois' defense do against them? I see it's fluctuating between 6.5, 7.5. I'm not at a point where I want to take Iowa. In terms of the other game, I'm just going to be trusting Arizona again. I've been on every game here. 6.5 I'm seeing. I'll be in Arizona, and I think that their size is going to – we saw, you know, Vokatidis have some troubles a little bit with Texas, but I think the size of Arizona – is a little more with Krivas, and I think it's going to be a little more difficult for them. So I think Arizona's size can give Purdue some problems. So I'm in Arizona, and I'll say I'll be on Illinois, but we know that Iowa's probably going to randomly cover that one.
Adam Zdroic, everybody. Find all of his great work for us over at rotowire.com. Previewing the Friday Major League Baseball slate, it's Dinger Friday on Prop Points. Home run props coming your way next. We'll be right back.
Washing Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson, back with you. It's Prop Points here on VSiN. Folks, baseball season is here. It's arrived. And VSiN Pro just made it a whole lot more profitable with MLB AI player prop projection powered by Opta AI. We're giving you data-driven projections for both hitters and pitchers every day, compared directly to DraftKings lines, so you know exactly where the value is. And every day, we break it all down into the top value plays and the strong plays. You don't have to do the heavy lifting. You can get access now with a VSiN Pro subscription. Go do that right now over at VSiN.com/MLB props. That's VSiN.com/MLB props. A fitting ad read, Jeff, to bring us back, because we're going to talk some MLB props for this 8-game Friday. Just one game in the early window, and it's not even the real early window, a 4:35 p.m. Eastern start between the Giants and the Yankees. We, of course, saw these teams on opening night back on Wednesday. That was a Yankees win. Also, not a great game for Aaron Judge, Jeff, to put it lightly. 4 strikeouts for him.
Right.
So how do you break this one down? Cam Schlittler taking on Robbie Ray. We're going to give out a dinger prop for every game on the slate as well. So go off, Jeff. Yankees, Giants, what do we got?
All right. First of all, so this is a fun pitching matchup there. I wanted to dig in a little bit on the right-handers versus Robbie Ray. Left-handers have no chance to hit a home run against him, I don't think, especially in that ballpark there. And Schlittler is actually really good at suppressing home runs. So I kind of want to dig into this. I figure after the bad day that Aaron Judge had against the Giants on opening day, after what he did in the WBC, that maybe you get a better price than you might otherwise normally get. So I'm going Aaron Judge +240. You can get that both at FanDuel and BetMGM right now. Odds are a little worse at other spots there. The other thing I'm going to bet here, the other bet I'll throw out in this one here is Cam Schlitter to record a win, -248 on the no. And I just don't think he's going to go deep into this game. Typically, you see starters not get to not get the 5 innings, let alone 6 innings. Schlittler got a late start because of his back in spring training. So I think he's particularly likely to maybe have a little bit of a short start here. The over-under and the number of his outs in this game is 14.5. I think that's set at that number for a reason. So we're going to go with the no on recording a win. Even though I like Schlittler, and I think I have him in a lot of places in fantasy this year, don't think he gets the win today.
Dinger Friday, Jeff, we're going Aaron Judge.
We are going Aaron Judge, +240. About the best price you're ever going to get on him.
Okay, got to play it. Got to play it. I think that's going to be a popular one today. We got the A's and the Blue Jays, a 7:07 p.m. Eastern first pitch. A very exact start time for Luis Severino, yes, going up against Kevin Gausman. You're looking at a K's prop, and then, of course, we need a dinger prop for this game as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk K's, first of all. Luis Severino had one of the smaller strikeout rates for a full-time starter last year at 17.6%. It's a pretty low rate. And the Blue Jays were the lowest strikeout team in baseball last year, 17.8%. Of course, you know, your odds makers know this too, and they set that at the line. And yet, I think it's a perfect storm. Add in the possibility that Severino doesn't go as deep into this one, maybe takes away a chance of getting that last strikeout. So even though it's at 3.5 Ks, I'm going the under on that. Even money over at DraftKings, under 3.5 Ks for Severino. Our dinger Friday. Severino doesn't give up a ton of home runs. Neither does Kevin Gausman. I'm going to go a right-handed hitter against Severino. Most of the time when Severino does give up a homer on the road, it's to a righty. We'll go Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at +400. Pretty good price. I know he only had 23 homers last year. Hit more late in the season, though, last season. So maybe there's some more late and home run potential. We've seen it in previous years. For elite player, +400 seems like a pretty decent price. Get that over at Hard Rock.
So the game everybody will be watching tonight, Jeff, going up against the Sweet 16. Rockies on the road in Miami, taking on the Marlins. Kyle Freeland going up against Sandy Alcantara. A lot of positive Alcantara buzz, at least in the fantasy world, over these last couple of weeks, Jeff. How do you break this one down? This feels like the equivalent of like a Wizards-Kings game.
Yeah, sure is a good thing they put this at night, you know, open their home opener. Why would you want to have this? Have the attention of the entire baseball community, but no, we have to go up against the Sweet 16 instead. All right, rant aside, Kyle Freeland, Rockies starter, was much better on the road than he was at home. Duh, no kidding. You know, it's Coors Field versus the road. But the stark difference is 1.27 whip on the road, 1.61 at Coors Field. He allowed just two homers to lefties last year, four the year before. So we're avoiding all the lefty hitters there in terms of home run props there. We're going to go Kyle Freeland, though, under 5.5 hits allowed. No Kyle Stowers in the lineup for the Marlins. I think this Marlins lineup might be a little slow. They were the worst hitting team in spring training. Some of that had to do with like Jacob Marseille playing in the WBC. But still, at minus 106, I'll take the under 5.5 hits allowed. And for Dinger Friday, we're going to go on the Rocky side of things here. Mickey Moniak, plus 600 over at FanDuel.
All right, much more fun matchup pitching-wise between the Royals and the Braves tonight in Atlanta, 7:15 p.m. Eastern. Star Cole Ragans going up against Chris Sale. I know you have strikeout props for both pitchers, and of course, we need a dinger prop as well.
Absolutely. So you remember when we did strikeout leaders, Ragans featured prominently. I liked his chances of leading baseball in strikeouts this year. He struck out 38% of the batters he faced last year. He added velocity in spring training this year. First spring training outing wasn't so great. After that, he got right back on it there. I like the over 6.5 Ks for both of these pitchers. For Ragans, you get it minus 102 over at FanDuel is the best price that I saw before coming onto the show. And then with Chris Sale, I saw even money over at BetMGM at 6.5 strikeouts. Both are high lines, but I think both are capable of doing that there. And we'll see about the new and improved Royals lineup there, whether they take the next step up. But I still think there's enough Ks out there for Chris Sale. They look to be in prime form in spring training. For Dinger Friday, it's hard. Now, this is a word about Dinger Friday. We're kind of forcing some of these home run bets. I'm not going to be there and betting every single game. But we're doing this for entertainment purposes only. We want to find one home run prop for every game. So just keep that in mind. I would pick and choose a little more carefully. Probably wouldn't choose one in this game, but because I am choosing one, I wanted to go on the Reagan side of things. He does every once in a while flirt with home runs. He did in spring training almost exclusively to right-handers. So I went with Austin Riley. I think the Acuna price is actually pretty decent too. He's around 400, but Austin Riley, you can get him at plus 440 over at FanDuel.
I don't want to hear any disclaimers, Jeff, on Dinger Friday.
No disclaimers.
It's Dinger Friday. We got to give Dinger props out. We got to give the people what they want. I don't care if you're betting every single one of these. These are the best leans you got. So Austin Riley, plus 440, Braves, minus 143 on the money line. Total coming in at 7.5 with Reagans and Sale on the mound. Let's head over to Angels Astros, Jeff, where we have Yusei Kikuchi taking on Mike Burrows. Tell me why Yordan Alvarez is hitting a home run tonight.
He's had three of them against Kikuchi in 18 at-bats over his career, 28 at-bats, excuse me, in his career. He's one of the lower prices out there, plus 325. The best I saw was at MGM at that one there. It's even worse at other shops, so just keep that in mind. But if you know, RotoWire has a tool that kind of scrapes the best hitter-pitcher matchups for the night there and worst hitter-pitcher matchups as well. And Kikuchi, by the way, is probably he's probably in the worst bet in terms of, like, recent history against his current opponent too. So keep that in mind. Maybe the fact that the Astros bat struggled so much yesterday might work in his favor, but we're going to go Yordan Alvarez, who was robbed of a homer. I don't know if you saw that yesterday, hit the roof and it ricocheted into foul territory. Would have easily been a moonshot home run, but because he hit the roof, which was closed, he lost a homer on that one there. Other thing I like in this game is Mike Burrows over 5.5 strikeouts, over 24% strikeout rate last year. Astros struck out 9 times against Hunter Brown yesterday, minus 120 at FanDuel.
All right, we're going to have to shortchange the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers in the late window. Ryan Nelson against Emmett Sheehan, but got to get one more Dinger Friday in there. Teoscar Hernandez is Jeff's guy at 4-1. Let's wrap up the show. Let's wrap up the week, Jeff, with our best bets of the night. You have a total in the Sweet 16 tonight.
Yeah, so we used this for the challenge yesterday, except we got a worse price. Here we get at 172.5 on the over on Michigan and Alabama. I think you and Adam Zdorek made the comparison to Arizona and Arkansas yesterday. I think this one plays out in a similar sort of fashion. Michigan and Alabama, both teams regularly hit over 90 points, so I like the over 172.5 over at DK.
I'm going to hammer home the Alperen Şengün over 20.5 points tonight in the NBA, minus 108 at FanDuel. You could grab that. Houston going up against the Memphis Grizzlies. Again, we do have some blowout potential here. But do we trust the Houston Rockets? This is what happens when we talk baseball, Jeff. Do we trust the Houston Rockets to actually come in and blow out the Grizzlies over the course of four quarters, perhaps? But the way Houston's playing right now, I think we could see Memphis hang around enough that we get close to a full workload for Şengün. So give me the over 20.5 against a Memphis team that really doesn't have a true starting center at this point. They're basically out of bodies down in Memphis. That's going to wrap the week, a fun week here on Prop Points. We'll, of course, be back with you on Monday, recapping everything in college hoops from the weekend. Keep it right here on VSiN Money Moves. JVT and Ben Stevens coming your way next. Mike Palm's going to stop by. Will Hill's going to stop by. Zach Cohen with some best bets in the NBA. Loaded edition of Money Moves coming your way next.